Podrick, Carnivore UK, welcome back to Eyes Wide Open. Real pleasure to host you. Thanks for coming in.
Pleasure to be here, mate.
So you've travelled up to the studio we've got going here, and you've moved over from, or you come from northwest London, and tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I've recently moved out to just outside London at the moment in Buckinghamshire. So very nice area, kind of cheaper property, lovely kind of loads of fields, loads of cows, which is good for me. And yeah, moved out of London very recently. And I think it's been a good decision for my health as well, because yeah, London's going to hell in a handbasket at the moment for a variety of reasons. So very happy to be in the outer suburbs.
Such a shame what's happening to our cities across Western Europe, isn't it? After seeing what happened in France recently in Paris, it's probably going to happen in London at some point soon, isn't it? So yeah, you've made a good decision there. So last time we spoke, we talked about all things carnivore, about your journey as well from, you know, your red pill, which was during COVID, which then led you to carnivore, and boom, everything else collapsed with it, all the other indoctrination collapsed with it, and it's been quite a journey for you. So tell us what you've been doing since the last time we spoke and how your journey in the whole carnivore diet has developed.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. The last time I was speaking to you, I remember I was relatively new to the diet. At that stage, I was still kind of including things like fruit and honey in my diet, which I've kind of sidelined now. I've now basically concentrated on animal foods only. So the crux of it is meat, eggs and dairy. And that's, I don't really touch anything else at the moment. So, yeah, as you say, and it started with the COVID stuff and the lockdowns and kind of having to listen to the news and seeing the way that different information was being manipulated for financial purposes, basically. I distinctly remember eating cereal one day and thinking, if they're lying about that stuff on the TV, then surely they're lying about our food as well. And that's when I kind of fell into the carnivore rabbit hole on YouTube. And yeah, I haven't looked back, lost a few stone in weight. I'm definitely less inflamed, less joint pain. All my digestive issues have cleared up that I used to have. Skin is better. So yeah, it's been an all-round great decision for my health, really.
Fantastic. So, you know, when you said you had your red pill awakening because you thought, well, if the feeding is feeding us this poison, what else are they doing? Mm. Was that like a green light for you to reject the indoctrination? So if it's part of the diet, then it must be part of everything else. And is that how it all collapsed, you know, really quickly for you?
Yeah, because I guess during the lockdowns, you saw the influence that pharmaceutical companies were having on policy. And so, you know, the logical conclusion is if we've got these big food companies doing the same thing with cereal or any of the ultra processed food that I was basically subsisting on, then, you know, if they're lying about that, they're lying about what's in the food. And that's, you know, that's been shown to be true, because all the stuff that you read on the nutritional information on ultra processed food is, you know, it's manipulated. It's not completely accurate. Protein, for example, if you see a protein figure on a bar or something like that, that's a crude figure. So that doesn't necessarily mean that that amount is absorbed, especially when it comes to plant-based foods. So it's tactics and things like that, which have just made me, also being a history teacher, and also just taking that step back and thinking, well, actually, what have we been eating for most of our evolution? Thousands and thousands and millions of years. It's been largely red meat, hunter-gatherer societies. And only really in the last 100 years have we seen, you know, this emergence of a whole host of sugar, seed oils, all this sort of modern junk that's just making us sick.
Yeah, it's a real deep rabbit hole, the whole diet thing, and people get very, very passionate about defending their diets.
Yes.
It's almost like a religious cult to some degree. People don't want you to tell them what they should eat, or they want to tell you what you should eat, yes, occasionally. And it's something that people really cling to. It's strange because it becomes part of their identity as well. And that's one of the interesting things to me, is that what COVID taught us is that big pharma are not science-based, right? They're money orientated, they're profit based. So if the science doesn't meet the profit expectations, the science changes until it meets the profit objectives.
Yeah.
Right? And that's one of the overriding things that became clear with COVID to give us a big illumination into that. Right? And you realize that it's very difficult to trust studies. Right, when you keep this study says this study says that, and often they're contradictory, especially when it comes to diet. Right, one minute you're saying it's dangerous to eat an egg, and the next minute it's they're saying eggs are good for you. Probably there's an element of confusion that's deliberate, so that we don't really know what to choose. So what that kind of taught me was that it's almost impossible to go, okay, that study says it's true, therefore it's true. So like what you said, if we look at the human organism, the human animal, the creature that we call us and life, is that we've been, or so it appears, that we've been hunter-gatherers for hundreds of thousands of years, which included men hunting for meat.
Yeah.
Maybe the women gathered berries and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's only in the last 5,000 years that the agricultural revolution has introduced carbohydrates.
Yeah.
Because before that, we weren't making crops, we weren't growing vegetables or wheat or grains, just weren't part of our diet. And that's only a blink of an eye.
Yes.
In relation to the human story. So when I can't trust studies anymore, I rely on that. I go back to that. Well, what are we adapted to eat?
It's a good point. So if you squeeze human evolution into a year calendar, we've been hunter-gatherers eating meat for 364 days. We've got probably a day of, as you were talking about, since the Neolithic agricultural revolution, of eating grains and plant agriculture. And then we've only had really an hour after, maybe just before the Second World War, since then, of things like seed oils and sugars in high amounts. So you can see with the modern day epidemics of diabetes, obesity, even neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's, etc., that's all a result of the evolutionary confusion that's brought about by this shock to the system. Because as you were talking about, really our only access to carbohydrates might have been seasonal fruit in a natural sense. So really that's only really available in the wild August, September time to make us fat for the winter, essentially. That's how it operated. But apart from that, you know, kind of cultivating these grains, wheat and barley and all that sort of stuff is just not something that the body recognizes. And then we process it further. So we strip out a lot of the fiber, we put it in cereal, we take some of the goodness out of that. So what goes into our bodies at the end of the day is this just kind of ultra processed junk mix that the body is just like, what the hell is this stuff? I don't know.
What do we do with it?
Yeah,
and it ends up, you know, inflaming the body, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Also as well, it appears to me that digestion is how we digest our foods is an important, often overlooked area when we have these debates about nutrition and about what works for us. And the human digestion system is similar to a dog's than it is to an ape.
Yeah.
It's shorter.
Yeah.
We don't ferment. You know, we're really high stomach acid,
yeah.
You know, which we've got a higher stomach acid than dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. If that was meant to be for plant matter, it wouldn't be in there, would it? It would be like, you know, fermenters, how the, you know, vegetarian animals eat. Yeah. What are your discoveries on human digestion?
You reminded me there when you were talking about it, everyone thinks like sweet corn, some sort of like miracle food. It's like, we can't even digest it.
It goes in, it goes out.
How does that work? Like, I don't really, the mental gymnastics of that is unbelievable. But as you were saying, yeah, so there's, this has been looked at actually by, you know, kind of professional archaeologists. They've, you know, excavated these kind of prehistoric sites where they found human bones. And basically you can do isotope testing, which shows you the metric differs, but sometimes it's like zinc, the amount of zinc in a bone, for example. And as you were saying, when we compare actually the amount of isotopes in the bones of humans compared to dogs and even other carnivores, humans are top of the chain every time. And I think, you know, you get this pushback sometimes. The carnivore community are kind of under attack, saying, well, humans are omnivores. So that might be true, actually. We do obviously have the ability to digest certain plant foods.
Well, that's just survival, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, what these isotope tests have shown is that actually the animal matter, the animal protein that we consumed is 90-95%. So, you know, compare that to what people are doing in the modern area, It's like, yeah, it's two different kinds.
Because I've seen the videos. There's a guy called Don Mates, and M-A-T-E-Z, American guy. Was a vegan for a long time and promoted it quite heavily, and then he just had an awakening and then became a hyper carnivore, is what he's called. A hyper carnivore is, I think it's defined as 70% of your diet is animal product. But he made a video, edited a video, in which he shows what we imagine to be herbivores eating meat, live meat. Right, so there's a video of cows, there's chicks in the field, and the cows are literally eating live chicks, right? Crunch them up and eat them. And there's a gazelle eating a snake, a dead snake.
Yes, I've seen that video. Yes, see that one?
Yeah, so it appears that, okay, if that's available, right, they'll eat it and they'll process it, but that's not what they're adapted for mainly. Monkeys do it as well, don't they? Occasional meat, and the way they go and hunt that meat ain't friendly. So, yeah, it seems that we can eat lots of different foodstuffs, but we are adapted for a specific type of food source, being animal-based. But we can eat, you know, the other stuff, the carbohydrates. That it's interesting research. Speak to Raw Egg Nationalist, and he does quite a bit of study on this. And he kind of posits the idea that carbohydrate consumption with the agricultural revolution was forced upon the native populations. So they were like, you know, they became captured, you know, by the grain states, that they were growing all this grain, that therefore they needed to protect it, they needed people to grow it, and these large populations started to grow in order to just protect the grains, you know. So we moved further and further away from our natural habitat, and our natural habitat got smaller and smaller as the grain fields grew. And that's where we're at today.
And what's really interesting is if you look at the human brain size, so if we look at when we start eating meat, wherever it was, 2.5 million years ago, we've got a brain size of about 500 cubic centimeters. It triples in size as with the more meat that we eat over our evolution. It goes up to around just under 1500 cubic centimeters. And then you see, since the start of the Neolithic revolution 10,000 years ago, you can see a slight 10-20% drop in average brain size since then. So the meat that we're eating, all the cholesterol, the saturated fat, it's great for the brain. It's done wonders for the human race. And then we've sort of been on a slight decline for the past 10,000 years. We've actually seen a decrease in brain size, which makes a lot of things in the modern world come into sense.
We're getting dumber. No shit, Sherlock. I remember reading a study that humans became specialists at hunting large game, really large game, like mammoths and stuff, because they only needed to make one kill for a long time. So they didn't have to go out and hunt every day. You just make one big kill. And that was it. Because I was speaking to Evelyn Ray on a previous podcast, and she was talking about, you know, one cow can feed a family for a year.
Yeah.
You know, so you don't need massive amounts of it. It's just one cow. And that study was saying that humans favored brain size as part of an evolutionary advantage so that we could become better hunters in groups to bring down these big game. Yeah. So rather than having claws and long teeth, right? It's because, you know, you ever seen that vegan meme where they show you the picture of all the different animals at the shop?
Teeth.
it's so lame, isn't it? But So there's lots of evidence that we've adapted to this diet, and it's natural to us, makes us flourish. But there's also, I understand where vegan arguments come into it, and I support them on it, which is animal welfare and the ending of industrial farming, because that just has to go. We can't be a part of that. We have to do what we can to end those barbaric practices. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think you make a good point. I think there's some things no industry is immune to criticism. I think the beef and lamb industry in the UK is fantastic. We regularly rank as some of the highest kind of animal welfare standards in the world for beef and lamb. Chicken and poultry is a different story. There's a lot of things that people don't understand with kind of poultry and pork farming in terms of how the animals are raised. I've seen videos, I've seen the clips. I wouldn't begin to defend any of that. But what's interesting is that actually, if you're on a carnivore diet, especially in the UK, you're actually, I'd rarely eat chicken. So I don't actually eat chicken. So that's kind of a good thing. Not because of animal welfare standards come into it, but actually, you know, if you look at some of the stuff that the chicken are fed in terms of soy, it's kind of high omega-6 value, so it's quite inflammatory. So chicken's not the best meat to eat, especially if it's chicken breast, which is too lean. And if you're eating too lean meat, then you're going to run into problems. Pork as well. Again, if you're getting kind of pasture-raised, grass-fed pork, that can be really good. Pork's a good animal. But again, some of the practices in the UK industry when they're feeding pigs, just literally sometimes rubbish. A lot of the times it's kind of imported soy and... it's not a good look. But if you look at the cows and the sheep in the UK, they're all fed on grass until maybe like the last 60 days of their life where they're fattened up on grain. But even then, cows tend to kind of filter out a lot of the bad stuff from any of the grains that they're given. So that would be my advice if people are looking to start, or if they're in the UK, your focus should definitely be on their good omega-3-6 balanced meats, which are lamb and beef. They're fantastic in the UK.
Because it's funny you talk about pork and chicken. You know, there's a real awakening at the moment with seed oils. I mean, 5 years ago, no one would even talk about seed oil. I mean, what the hell? You know, no one had an idea about it in the popular discourse anyway. But you have people like Ray Pete, who died last year, God rest his soul, amazing guy, Dr. Pete. And he was one of the pioneers of bringing seed oil information to the public. He was doing it for like 30 years, right? But no one was listening at the time, right? And finally, his ideas are starting to take hold because people can see the results of what's happening with the seed oils. And he tells the story originally that seed oils were industrial oil to begin with, right? And machinery was run on it. You know, Dr. Ferdinand Porsche presented his engine, the diesel engine, you know, with vegetable oil, run on vegetable oil. Yeah. And so what happened is, as the story goes, is that farmers discovered that if they fed seed oils to their turkeys, I think it was originally, they would go super fat. And all of a sudden, they realized they could get more money for this animal at market. And farmers started giving it to pigs and turkeys and poultry, because they have something to do with the way their fat is made, is that that's where the seed oils go, to their fat. It doesn't happen with ruminant animals like cows and lamb. So then the industrial seed industry switched focus, and all of a sudden now it was, let's feed this to humans. Let's feed this to, you know, the human food chain. Now, that's what we've saw over the last 50 years, 40 years, is this introduction of these industrial oils manufactured, you know, on an industrial scale. And we're told that they're safe for humans to eat. But now we're starting to see big, big pushback. Tell us what your take is on the whole seed oil revolution that we're seeing at the moment.
Yeah, it's good. Again, it's one of those things that's just completely unnatural, isn't it? You take a plant seed and then you extract however many... hundreds of seeds to get your tablespoon of oil. It's just not a natural, process. And then what makes it worse, it's not as if some of them are cold pressed, maybe some of them are less inflammatory, but then again, it's not something that we've eaten in our diet for the majority. Yeah. And then we're just kind of shocking the system. But then they take the oil and then they bleach it, they deodorize it. We've got use of solvents like hexane that are kind of running through these things. And then even stuff like olive oil in the supermarkets, some of them you've got to be really careful with what olive oil you buy, because a lot of them are mixed with these kind of rubbish cheap oils.
Well, the counterfeit olive oil industry is worth billions. The mafia are all over that one.
Which is pretty scary. But I've definitely noticed a lot of kind of less inflammation in my own system. A lot more better mentally as well, weirdly, with the you're trying to ditch that stuff out of my diet. It's bad news for sure.
Thanks for being here today. I just want to take a moment to acknowledge your support, because without it, I'd be just another lonely YouTuber shouting into the void. You're the fuel that keeps this truth-seeking train chugging along. For that, I'm grateful. But listen up, my fellow truth seekers, if you're ready to take it up a notch and dive headfirst into the deep end of the rabbit hole, then consider an Eyes Wide Open paid membership. A VIP pass to a world of uncensored content and an opportunity to learn about real, actionable solutions. What you can do to break free of the system. It's just £5 a month. I mean, come on, that's less than what you'd pay for a watered-down pint of beer at your local hipster bar. with eyes wide open, you'll be drowning in a sea of knowledge. Make new friends and have some laughs along the way. It's a win-win, my friends. Because let me tell you, independent content creators like me, we're the underdogs of the media. We're up against giant corporations with unlimited funding. We need your support. So if you're ready to embrace the truth, shatter the illusions we've been fed, then head on over to lawrenceeasman.com or click that tantalizing link below. Together, we can pierce the veil, uncover the truth, and survive and thrive. I'll see you on the other side, my friends.
What's your take on the latest news in the way we're seeing now big push from whoever it is that's running the show? Yeah, there seems to be a daily assault on meat eating or even beef production. We saw it in Ireland, didn't we, recently? There's a huge cull going to be of Ireland's cattle, which, you know, is one of their main exports, one of their main industries. What's your take on that? What's been happening with this, you know, attack on people eating meat? Do you think they'll be successful? Are they going to take my steak away, Padre?
Oh, I hope not. It's interesting that you mentioned Ireland, actually, because I was looking recently at some of the history around the Irish potato famine. So you might know that the result of that was 8 million people in Ireland at the time. 1 million people died. 1 million people were forced to emigrate. But actually, I was looking at the amount of cattle that were in Ireland at that time. And there was 2 million cattle in Ireland at that time, right? And going off what you've just said about feeding a family for a year, one cow, nobody needed to die and nobody needed to emigrate in that episode. But obviously, maybe the English landlord appetite for beef wouldn't be stopped. But I was kind of looking at that. I was thinking, we've got a very similar situation here today, because we've got, actually, if you look at some of the documents, the official documents that came out at the time of the famine, there was all this talk about the Irish being, obviously it was part of the UK at the time, being a bit of a burden on the economy, having this idea of useless eaters, which we've come to see a lot more of in the modern plan with the WEF and the Agenda 2030. Again, tying into the thing that I've said about the brain size as well. If you take these saturated fats and you take this cholesterol away from people, your brain health suffers. And if your brain health suffers, you get dumb. And then you're possibly more easier to control. You're less healthy, so then you're more dependent on pharmaceutical interventions. And then everyone's a winner in that case, aren't they? But it is. It's scary how it's a mind virus, isn't it? All this environmental thing. It's completely, it's people gone completely mad. And the culling of cows is just absolutely ridiculous. Even if you accept that, let's say, cows are a problem, which I don't, but even if you give that to them, the amount of difference that 200,000 cattle in Ireland make as part of a natural methane cycle compared to maybe some of the other stuff that is going on in the world and the Chinas and all that sort of stuff, then it's completely minuscule, and it's just completely for show. And I think it's more about kind of causing detriment to our health rather than any so-called environmental reasons.
100% agreed. I never believe anything they say. In fact, anything they say, I take it as a barefaced lie and try and figure out what the truth is. Usually it's the opposite of what they're telling. It's usually a good metric to try and figure it out. The bullshit reason they're giving us to cull the herd, right? We're the herd as well, right? So we're the culling the beef herd, you know, it was trying to force us onto what's it called? A great reset diet, you know, which is just gruel. Yeah. They're just going to be giving us slop and gruel and tarting it up with fancy colours and lots of sugar just to try and make it more palatable. Yeah. But people reject it, you know, deep in their soul, they can sense that there's something really, really wrong with what they're doing to the food supply. And I really hope that they fail in this attempt to carry out another mass starvation, which is, it looks like that's what they're attempting to do. But it's like, you know, Big Pharma, their business model that they would love to have across the board is dependency, is to make us dependent on the drugs that they produce for life. And there's a lot of talk about that was what was going on with the jab, is the different levels of the jab were causing problems in our immune system, and the only way to fix them was to go and get another jab. There's talk about that. And then there's other things like, you know, diabetes. If diet is causing diabetes, you have to have insulin.
for life. You're dependent on insulin, on Big Pharma giving you the insulin to keep you alive. You know, we're seeing that also with the collapse in testosterone for men. Right, so what's happening? Big Pharma stepping in, going, "Don't worry, we'll jab you with testosterone," but you then become dependent for life upon what it is that they're selling. So, from a business perspective, for them, if they're thinking on a global scale, and they're talking about trillions of dollars, aren't we here? Massive, massive amounts of money. Is that the more they can make the populations of the herd dependent on their drugs, then the more likely it is that they're able to use their enormous wealth and influence to get politicians and governments and those people who are making legal decisions to make those decisions in the favor of Big Pharma.
Yeah, and that's where the attack on meat comes in, because, you know, kind of long scale kind of epidemiological studies show that the less kind of meat and animal products that you eat, then you kind of the lower longevity and the more health problems you occur in older age. And that's where they come in with all their drugs and the pills and the stuff to treat you when you're older. So if you can start them young, especially if you look at the plant-based kind of agenda at the moment, it's very focused on, or its main target seems to be young people and young women, especially.
Women and children.
Yeah, yeah. So if you can get them young, their health starts to deteriorate at a young age. And some of these, you know, if you feed a child a vegan diet, you risk, due to deficiencies in B12, among other things, you risk neurological damage that is irreversible. So if you've got irreversible neurological damage, that's actually somewhat counterintuitively, you get actually, you can probably hook someone on medication for a lifetime, depending on what the kind of symptoms and the trouble are. So it's very kind of scary that some, you know, it's bad enough if you're doing a vegan diet at any age, but especially for kids and for kind of vegan mothers and pregnancies and things like that, it's just...
I feel so sorry for those kids, I really do. Yeah, I know. But it's like, you know, this dystopian hellscape that they're trying to paint is one attack after another, isn't it? I mean, a lot of the time we don't know which way to push. But tell me about you on a personal level, right, on how these decisions you've made for your life have improved your quality of life and the way you're approaching your own, you know,
experience here. Yeah, it's a good question. So as you probably know, I was someone who was, up until maybe 3-4 years ago, just completely dependent on ultra processed foods. Everything I was eating came from a packet and that was already processed and made in the factory. And I always say the processed food makes processed people. So it had an effect on my character. Maybe I was kind of looking back, just, you know, extra kind of anxious, just like in a mood for maybe some of the time for no reason. And then you realize like the stuff that you're putting in your system on a daily basis has a huge impact on the way that you feel, even the way that you conduct yourself as well. So I felt like my kind of confidence is high. At the same time though, it's still quite distressing because you feel like you're red pilled, but at the same time, you've got friends and family that are still kind of doing the deleterious habits that you used to do, in terms of like, whether it be binge drinking every weekend or whether it be kind of eating cereal or fucking margarine or anything like that. All of these crappy foods that these habits that just wreck your life. And, you know, a lot of my kind of friends now think I'm a bit odd, and probably a lot of people, other people do as well. But it's not because I'm just inherently strange. It's because I just don't do any of the stuff or eat any of the stuff that they do. And like my friends and family have had loads of comments about, "Oh, you're eating too much red meat, we're worried for you." It's just like they're sitting there eating an ice cream and a fucking Mars bar or something stupid like that. It's just like you do wonder sometimes, like, how do I get through to these people? But I guess you've got to focus on yourself, make yourself healthy, and then hopefully just be like an example that you can kind of share with people. So obviously with my weight loss and stuff, and I feel mentally I'm a different person now as well, especially eating more meat. So yeah, all good things.
What's your your ambitions with your professional life? Because I know you're kind of thinking of doing new things and moving on from the school teaching.
Yeah, so I do feel like there's a gap in the market in terms of some of the stuff that we talked about with Ireland and the cows. Who's standing up for these people? You know, I look around and I see like what organisations are up in arms about this. None of the farming unions in Ireland give a fuck about that. They're not really vocal. They're just willing to take orders. In the UK, it's kind of the same thing. NFU and all these organisations, they're quite soft-handed. There needs to be a really kind of, I don't know if it's a political party or just an organisation, something that's like semi-intellectual, that we've got, you know, a broad kind of coalition of voices professionals, etc., that are pushing back against this madness. So I would quite like to do something like that in terms of, like,
that sounds awesome. That sounds like you thought about it quite deeply as well, to be fair. Yeah. Very articulate idea there. Yeah.
So I have started a page called Carnival Europe, which is like a separate Instagram page. I've shadow banned that my life on my Carnival UK page. So I set that up, but I want to do something in terms of just showing what's going around in Europe, in terms of hearing about the dairy farmers in Spain, farmers in France are up in arms, in Lithuania, and just highlighting these issues and showing actually this is like a continent, well, it's a global thing, but especially on a continental level, this madness is infecting governments across the board. So we need someone to, or something, or some sort of group to raise awareness of these issues and just to be some sort of presence, because I don't feel that that exists at the moment. So something along those lines would be really cool.
That's a brilliant idea. I think you should pursue it. That's a really, really good idea.
Well, I haven't fleshed out the meat, pardon the pun, on the bones yet, but the...
Would it be like a lobbying group?
Yeah, something of that. I'd hope that maybe it starts as some sort of online organisation, and then a lot of that stuff is just like... Because I just don't know, obviously, being a teacher at the moment, it's really kind of time-heavy job, so I don't really have the time, as much time as I would like to write articles or post this and post that at the moment. So I feel like a lot of that stuff is dependent on funding from people who care about that sort of stuff. But we'll see where it goes.
What's the diet like in the secondary school you work in? Because I remember my school dinners, man. Jeez. I was a vegetarian in senior school for about 4 years. I know. But I was persuaded by some of the documentaries we saw about industrial farming. That's what made me think I don't want to be a part of that. And I was a vegetarian in quite a tough school called Roughwood School in Liverpool. Yeah, but all people used to live off, all the kids used to eat was chips, gravy, and a pie. That's it. That's what we all...
Was there meat in the pie, at least?
Oh, no, cheese pie. That's what you get, is a cheese pie. Have school dinners improved since that time, or are they still absolute garbage?
Oh, it's disgusting what they're feeding kids, I think. Everything is, even the meat is like super ultra processed. It's chips, it's like... And yeah, we've got this thing in New York, haven't we, about the vegan Mondays and the vegan Fridays. And it's not as bad in the UK, but we have seen some schools now and a growing number going completely vegan, which means that even the good bit, like the cheese and the pie, for example, you think, obviously, that's not a healthy meal, but you think at least you've got something that you can cling on to. And then they've just got nothing. It's chips, it's pizzas, it's baguettes. And then when they go healthy, it's all like broccoli and carrots and stuff. It's like, okay, it's a step forward, but it's not the, you know, these kids are at school.
I don't think broccoli is even healthy. I think that's a scam as well. I mean, look at it. Who wants to eat broccoli? If you, the only reason you eat broccoli is because you think, or you've been conditioned to think, that it's healthy. Right? Why else would you eat broccoli?
Yeah, well, actually, Dr. Anthony Chafee.
Green mush.
Oh, it's just disgusting.
Yeah.
But Dr. Chafee, who's big in the carnivore communities, did a talk recently where he showed he studied botany at medical school, or one of the schools he was at, and there was like over 130 carcinogens in broccoli, and that just doesn't get discussed. It's like these plant defense chemicals that are probably wreaking havoc in your gut. And obviously, that's dosed.
I think that's a really important point, is that people overlook anti-nutrients that are in plants. Plants can't run away, and therefore they don't want you to eat them, so they put poison into the into the plant, and largely we eat those poisons, and that's why some people can have all kinds of weird reactions to vegetables, and people don't even talk about that, do they?
There's a reason why you don't like vegetables. Yeah. And you're just kind of forced to subsist on them when you're a kid. But yeah, no, some people argue that actually the dose is dose dependent. So actually they're quite low. So there's a bit of a hormetic effect where you can kind of, it's only maybe an issue at the start and then your body adapts and it's like fine. But you see all these case studies of vegans and vegetarians that have like the worst digestive stories about SIBO or like flatulence and all the rest of it. And you think that's obviously got to do something with the high amount of the plant chemicals that we were talking about and just wreaking havoc on the gut.
But it's we'll just go back to the school kids for a moment, because did you remember when Jamie Oliver did school dinners, right? And he was trying to bring in higher quality food. It was still the same kind of food, wasn't it? But he was trying to bring higher quality food and the kids just rejected it. They didn't want the turkey twizzlers, didn't they?
He started crying, for fuck's sake.
He couldn't handle it, could he? Yeah. But what's interesting there is that the kids, even at that age, have been conditioned to eat certain types of food. Yeah. The turkey twizzlers were the highly processed garbage, basically, and that's what he was trying to get out and bring in a healthy pasta with basil.
Yeah,
it didn't go far.
Probably better than Twizzlers, but I don't think that's a great step ahead. If you're, you know, imagine if you're a kid as well and you're eating a big lunch full of pasta and then you've got like double history after lunch and you're expected just to be like alert and with it, you know, across, you know.
Carbohydrate coma.
Yeah, literally. It's just like ridiculous. They should be, I don't think any school kid now, if you went into random school, secondary school, anywhere near here, and you ask them, what, you know, have you heard of the word ketogenic? I don't think any of them would be able to tell you what that means. So we've got a problem with health education, I think, in the UK.
Well, the thing is that the people who are influencing big agriculture, big pharma, they're the ones who are lobbying the government, paying for MPs to be elected and their campaigns. So these guys who are going into parliament that are making their decisions, they're not working on behalf of the people. They're working on behalf of their donors. They're working on behalf of big agriculture, all these huge lobbying groups. Someone mentioned recently, they said, I think it was good, is that in the same way that Formula One drivers wear all their sponsors on the uniform, politicians should be obliged to do the same.
Can you
imagine? So that we know who owns them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But get this right, whole milk, illegal to serve in UK schools completely. It's the same in America. And you just think that just encapsulates everything about what's wrong with the system.
Mm. Well, it goes back to Louis Pasteur, doesn't it? Louis Pasteur pasteurized the milk.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was like the attack dog of big pharma because he was the guy that made popular germ theory, vaccines, all that all can be traced through Louis Pasteur. You know, and then we have all this food that's boiled to death before it's given to us to eat, by which point it's not got any of the nutrients or enzymes or good stuff that makes us healthy.
Completely dead, yeah. That's why I always say people to, if you're drinking milk, go for raw, because you you get much more bang for your buck.
It's amazing with raw milk as well, compared raw milk compared to pasteurized milk. If you leave raw milk out, it just turns into yogurt.
Yeah.
That's it. You leave pasteurized milk out, within a few days it's gone rancid and you wouldn't do anything with it. So there's something telling you there that, okay, we're going to bring it part one to an end now. And then we're going to talk about solutions in part two. We're going to talk about how people who are interested in a carnivore diet or an animal-based diet, how they can plan ahead, how they can be successful, because people can fail. I've done it myself a few times and fell at a few, you know, silly hurdles. And how they can begin to reclaim their health if they're feeling unwell, and how they can try at least the carnivore diet as a, at least as an option to find out if they're going to feel better. So we'll talk about that in a sec. But before we do, for anyone that's not following us over into part two, where can people find you online if they want to get in touch with you?
What's the score?
Yeah, so mostly on Instagram at the moment. I do have like Twitter and YouTube pages, but they're very inactive. So Instagram is definitely the main place, the Carnivore UK. Yeah, follow me there if you're interested in anything to do with like farming, carnivore diet, anything in that space, then yeah, that's where you find me.
Okay, cool. I will put that in the description as always. Any final words on carnivore?
Yeah, I just think, I said the same recently to someone else. I just said, just if you're looking at these, our kind of space, and you're thinking, God, these people are a bit weird, I would say just to try it. And that doesn't mean carnivore strictly is actually beef, water and salt, elimination diet. But even just, I would say to people, if you're interested in improving your health a little bit, just increase the amount of meat that you're eating. So if you feel comfortable sticking to the fruit and vegetable on the side as well and doing other things to a small extent, fine. Just maybe increase the amount of steak, mince, whatever form of meat it is in your diet, and you'll definitely see some sort of progress there.
Cool. Thanks for that. Really enjoyed that conversation. For all of our members, we'll see you over in part two. For everyone else, why aren't you a member yet? Okay. Thanks a lot. I'll speak to you soon.